What is this about your, you've got to do what tonight?
Well, see, I came up, I had some other clothes and stuff with me, really wouldn't be any good out here, so I just left him with Tony, because I stayed with him Friday night since he got in late.
Yeah.
And he's going to work tomorrow. And I don't know where he's going to be, so I wanted to go in, see what was going on, let him know where I'd be. So, he's kind of like, since he's living up here, it's somewhere for me to stay whenever I'm passing through. Let's see.
Yeah. Is that your cousin?
No, he's just a good friend of mine.
Tony?
Mm-hmm. He's a character. Oh, she's a character.
He's not the one that told the teacher about the yellow pig?
That's Tony. Yeah, Tony is, he's quite a guy. He's got a really good mind, really sharp.
What did he have to get through school?
No, he's got another year. He's studying out there.
You think he'll make it?
More of a question, will the school make it? he's just got so much upstairs. He's got me on in the Faulkner a little bit, because he's always throwing books at me. He says, you've got to read this, you've got to read this, you've got to read this. I'm going, Tony, I can just read so fast. And,
he's fast reading.
Oh, apparently so. Well, he's just quick, and he reads it, he catches it. He just catches it, and he remembers it all. He just recited. He was into John Keats this summer, and every letter he wrote me was just quote after quote after quote of John Keats, and explaining this, explaining this, explaining this, like, whew. And he surprised me, because he read The Sound and the Fury, and he said, you see what he's done, Rick? He's done this from four different points of view. I go, yeah, that's right. It took me a long time to ever realize that. It's right there.
But he doesn't read the Hamlet.
I don't know if he has or not. He's the one that keeps saying, well, I'll join the army when this is over. He's out for glory. He's an old romantic at heart.
Yeah.
There's no place for him in this time.
And then you got to meet the bus tomorrow?
Well, a friend of mine's coming at 5. He's the one, he's a good friend of mine. He's coming up to school here. He wanted me to go to Tallahassee with him, so I said, well, we'll see. Because I didn't know what was going on here. So I think I have to go see him, because he's just a very dear friend. But I don't think I want to go to Tallahassee. Because I don't know anybody over there. It's just a look around, but what can you see in a day?
I just didn't know whether we'd be available here or not.
No, I was just kind of making plans.
Rick, you've got some new friends. I don't know if this bus is
going
to happen to you.
That's only two. There's only three or four.
I know you don't know anything about them.
Well, yeah, I do. I spent a great deal of time studying them. Tony, I haven't known too long, but he and I hit it off right away. It was really surprising. I don't know too much about him, though.
Well, your talk's just Freudian.
Yeah.
About what people think about you and you think about them.
Yeah. And that's all we ever talk about, too. It's always heavy, heavy, heavy stuff. I get tired of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got the vet's going to have a busy time here Tuesday morning. If he does that cold.
It's something, too.
It won't take him long for the cold down.
What's he going to be working on, cold?
Death.
Well, I'm only going to be in town a couple hours tonight. I'll come back.
And Wednesday morning, what you do when you wean them, you just give them so long to start to know what's happened. And they find out pretty quick. And then you got it for 24 hours. Now, if there's some way I could take those calves off where they couldn't see them or hear them for 24 hours, it'd all be over.
For the mothers to hear them? Or is it harder on the cow than it is on the calf?
No, the cows would get over it just as soon as their udders relieved. You see, it's the pressure of the udders partly. But the calves, you see, are hungry. And they stay hungry, you see, they don't forget that for a long time. And every time they think about that, they'll bawl. You see, now they get the cow to bawling. But if you can get them out of sight and sound, it doesn't take long. Now, you see, Cookie has been making me a cattle trailer,
mm-hmm.
where I can take some animals around.
Yeah.
And if I had one, I could take them over to Roberts and leave them overnight. Take them over to Everett Smith's and leave them overnight. And I get through with all that bawling.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't get around to me. He's made 15 trailers since I gave him $100.
Sounds like James.
Yeah. Needed some iron. $100.
3 years ago.
Now, your report, what are you going to report on? You don't care.
Just whatever happens hit me.
Yeah.
And I mean, trying to force something no more. That's right. It's like, it works out, and all of a sudden, I can just write it out, but now if I try and write it out, had that happen before. I've tried to write, like something would happen, and I wanted to write it down, and it just wasn't worked out, and I'd start writing, and I just got off on the most awful tangents. And I would just write and write, and I'd look and I'd say, well, I haven't done a thing what I wanted. And I just tear it up and throw it away, because I was just going off on the corners. And
I know, yeah, but if you're reporting on something that's taking place, you don't go off.
Right.
What you speak of is a hazard you don't have just in reporting. Now, let me tell you one thing. This is in between jobs.
I hope. Then I get another job.
Huh?
Get another job.
You don't have another job?
Yeah, I'm looking for one. I'm not, I don't get too worried about that kind of thing. My parents do, but I don't. Because I can always go back to work for the people I was working for.
Okay.
Yeah, but see, they want me, they said, look, if you don't work for us, don't do it just to have a job. You know, we really want somebody to come work for this company, because they're looking for somebody who put in 30 years with the company. And I'm just kind of leery of that, because they want everything you got.
That's it.
And I'm not going to get
that's
it.
That's what they all do.
Well, I'm just not going to give that, because I've got other ideas. It's like this kind of thing, you see.
What ideas do you have?
Well, doing this kind of studying, you got to save some time for this. If you just devote yourself to sales, they just eat you up. But, see, I'm not that kind of businessman, and I'm not that kind of salesman. Some of the ones I've worked with, oh, they just eat you up.
You couldn't even take a weekend out. Do this what you did this weekend.
They're always thinking some way. That's their life. That's their challenge. That's Manny was that way.
You know, that old saying, the buck private in the rear ranks is the one in the army that has Prescott climate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. You see, there's no rule to go by. Now, Franny, you know, Miss Hurley.
Mm-hmm.
Her boy, her son, oldest, at least Don. Oh, he got into a number of things. He's got a degree in law and one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a right smart training. And he doesn't even sell insurance anymore. He was president of the company, you know, when he was early. And he got out of it. He got into something else. Well, I think he's got more leeway, you know. But he still got too much on his mind. He never has. Now he's a bright fellow, of course, but he never has read a book with me. Not one. He hasn't read Jack and Jill with me. And he's been there, you know. He hasn't been coming much lately because I've been too hard to get along with. I've been, you know, sort of on the edge from too much desperate. But they come down and visit and have plenty of time. Oh, I guess he read one or two little books. You know, we'll talk about them. So, well, he fights the battles for the YMCA and but you see this sort of thing. Well, you see, there's so much in the world. What he does is, I suppose, it's interesting. And it takes a gifted thing. But I don't know. There ought to be easy ways of making a living. I don't know whether or not. I just don't know. I never found one. And I never found any easy money. They say, you just want to chase a dollar, you can get it. But I've chased dollars and didn't get them. And it just fall off in my pocket.
You ought to be able to have a job, as Rick says, without having to give every minute of your time to it.
Say, the only people I found that can do that.
Night, the 12th of September, 71, gentlemen, right. This was Sunday night at supper, or after the 12th of September, 71, Channel 1, right, and we all had so much up and through. Saturday night was a high point at supper, and then Fanny left Sunday morning, and now this is all day Sunday, and this is Sunday night, and that's a pretty long stretch of it for a man that's not conditioned to it. And we couldn't get going. I turned on the tape. I thought, well, that would work, but it didn't work. Just made him nervous. This is the first. Some of the talk had been delightful. That's at that supper about the crew of men that climbed up the palm trees after the hurricane.
Making me nervous. Is this the way you eat it at noon?
I really don't have an eating schedule anymore. When I was in college, I just ate when I was hungry. When I go home, I eat, you know, when my mom fixes it. And I'm working just when you have a chance. And eat in restaurants a lot. So I just don't have any schedule eating anymore.
Well, is this the sort of food you eat at noon? For lunch?
Yeah. I eat just about anything.
Well, what do you eat? What do you ask for when you go in?
If you go to a restaurant, we usually eat like this.
Well, yeah.
Eat a good meal.
Just eat a regular meal?
Yeah. You know, you're ordering, and it all comes. I guess if you go to a hamburger place, you just have hamburgers. You know, french fries or something.
Which way do you go?
It depends a lot on the pocketbook, you know. See, they bought lunch for us. Or they gave us $1.25 a day to eat lunch on when I was working. Which wouldn't quite cover the cost of a meal in the restaurant or cafeteria. So we'd eat maybe 2 days in a Burger Castle or something where we could eat for maybe 80 cents. We'll accumulate a little extra money, then we could eat in the restaurant the other 2 or 3 days. But what I really like to eat is Cuban restaurants. Because they're reasonable, you know?
You don't want to look at those, huh?
And you get really good food. You get a lot of it. I mean, they just fill you up.
Do they?
Because they get a lot of rice. I mean, they eat rice.
Cuba?
Oh, my God. They'll put the Chinese under the table the way they eat rice. You go in a grocery store.
Now you see you're overdoing it, babe. I've already given the green light, and you're giving him 3 more.
And
furthermore, you're diverting him to the Cuba, to the Chinese, and to the something else. I kept him on the track. I said, do this.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, you go into like an American grocery store, and you'll see maybe, at the biggest, 3-pound bag of rice. You go in a Cuban grocery store, you won't see anything but 25-pound bags. And I have been back in stores, and they must have had 1,000 of these 25-pound bags of rice stacked out. And he'd sell it. He'd sell it all.
And you see the signs of that in a Cuban restaurant.
Yeah, because when you buy a meal, you know, like with American meal, you get a baked potato. With a Cuban meal, you get rice. I mean, anything you order, you're going to get rice. It's just like getting a glass of water. It's always there. Like you go in an Italian restaurant and order spaghetti.
Oh,
you're
in a Cuban restaurant.
In a Cuban restaurant, you don't ever order black beans and rice because that's always with the meal. It's always rice.
Black beans?
Yeah, black beans is something that goes with the rice. It's a favorite dish. You can order just plain rice, but usually they got black beans on it. It's like a topping.
Is that the meal, or is that just...
No, it's just something that's always going to be there. The meal will be maybe, you have a meat, most usually pork. Pork's one of their favorites. And then some kind of vegetable, maybe yucca or a plant, which is kind of like bananas, but have to be cooked. And then you'll have rice. And I mean, they will just serve you rice and rice and rice, and you just get stuffed with rice. And it's really good.
You mean you're limited in your intake?
Well, I limit my intake. I could eat a lot more than I do, but I don't, because, you know, it just makes me feel bad. Yeah. It just diverts all my energy to digesting food.
You mean you just eat what you think you need to get your supper?
Yeah. I'd rather go away feeling a little hungry. because we just don't need that much. At least I don't. If I eat big at night, then I won't eat breakfast in the morning because I just don't want breakfast. I'm not hungry. I just don't like to eat because the meal time is there. So I'm not hungry. If I get up and eat breakfast, then I'll guarantee I'll be hungry around noontime. But if I don't eat anything, then I won't get hungry. And I can go almost all day without eating.
Did you do that?
Sometimes. They'll start catching up with me then. End up feeling real tired.
The Cubans, they don't limit themselves.
I don't think so, because, if you look at Cuban women, they all get kind of chubby. And they like it that way. They like to be good size. So I guess they just eat. When they're young, they're pretty trim. But once they start getting a little older, they just put on weight. And they keep it.
And that's the way they like to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've seen them eat now, or you noticed, did you pay attention?
Well, not really, because, you just be in a restaurant a few times when I was working. I've never eaten a dinner with a Cuban family. But judging by the portions they serve you, the American restaurant, they'll just serve you as little as they can and charge as much as they can. The Cuban restaurant just stuff it.
Rick, I'll tell you what I wish you'd do. I was so tired last night, my mind wasn't working. I enjoy being tired, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't in pain. But I missed out on what you said, about the hurricane.
Those tree surgeons?
Yeah. They performed
the first, real experience I've had with is when we had that tree taken out, the palm tree we had. It was a nice tree, but it was tall. It was just too tall. And you got to worry about things like that because hurricane will take it down, put it on the house, and then you got a lot of damage. So we call them, come take it out. Now,
and your mama didn't touch it?
No, she must have called a dozen people before she decided on anybody. Of course, she was more by price than reputation. So they showed up in an old beat-up truck, just three of them. And, they weren't, dressed in uniforms or anything. Nothing to indicate that they were, really good. So she told me to go out and watch. Now, I don't know anything about them, but she just wanted me out there. So I walked out, and they started unloading the truck. And just the way they handled everything, each one knew what they were doing. They all had their job lined up. And I just knew they knew what they were doing. They had just done it a lot. And one of them looked at the tree and said, well, we'll just cut it down. You don't need to top it. And I said, that's pretty tall. Don't you think you ought to cut top out of it? He said, no, that's only about 25 feet. But see, 25 feet to me is a long way up. But to him, it was just, well, that's just 25 feet. We'll just drop it down. So this one real tall guy who apparently, was kind of like crew leader or something. He put on climbing spikes. He walked up this tree. Real casual, like, he had the safety belt dangling, And I figured he'd go up tree and put the safety belt around it and, fight his way up tree, but he just walked right up the tree. Just like he does it all the time, which I guess he does. I tried to climb those trees and it's hard, because the thing was going straight up. He just went right up that tree. And he got to the top and then hooked the belt there so he could lean back and tied a rope around it. And then he just shinnied on down. And he must not have been up there now. I just looked at him like, well, you're part cat or something. So they hooked that rope to the bumper of the truck and then, put a little strain on it so they'd get the tree to fall where they wanted. And he walked up with a big chainsaw and just cut right through it. Woo! Hit the ground. And that was it. The end of that tree. And then they cut it up in sections, see. And he'd take his foot. roll that section, see if it was free, and then once I get one section cut all the way half, then I can just roll that whole trunk. As long as you got the head of that tree on there, you can't roll it, because that's like just something that stops it. And then they'd roll it over and cut on through and pick up all the sections and throw them in the truck and cut the head up and that's it. And haul it off.
And they hauled it off by it.
Yeah, that's kind of a nuisance because they're heavy, and I think they're required to haul it off where I live.
But they just come around and didn't look like they even tried.
I've never seen people have so much fun in my life. They were, they were just clowns. And they'd pick up that section of tree, and he'd grunt and groan, but he was really laughing. And they're, you know, they're always kidding each other. They just had the best time. I really wanted to go work with them. Because they just all knew what they were doing. There's no conflict.
They kidding each other?
Oh, yeah. This one guy, he finished tying the rope for the bumper, you know? And a big fat guy. One of the guys was a big fat guy. And this guy tied the rope up. He was kind of a muscular guy, a little bit, about the size of me. And he backed up to look at it, and when he did, he bumped into this fat guy, you know. This fat guy goes staggering across the lawn like he'd been hit real hard, falling down, groaning. I just sat there and roared and laughed. It was a sideshow.
Well, they just worked like they had an audience all
night. Yeah. And, they're right proud of what they were doing. He, I was talking to him, you know. And I felt kind of funny because he kept saying sir to me. And I kept thinking, I hope you don't think I'm married to my mother. He'd be a little old for my wife. And I was asking him what to do about the stump because we wanted to, you know, cut low to the ground so we could, you know, grass over. And I asked him, can you cut it any lower? And he says, no, well, sir, we'll have to bring a stump grinder in for that. And just the way he said it, I knew, you know, they'd done the best they could. So one of the other guys got a chainsaw and came up and said, well, here, this will help you out. And he cut an X in the middle of it and poured gas in there. And he said that brought it out pretty fast. But I got talking to him. And he was telling me they went up to North Carolina when Hurricane came through up there. And this is a wild goose chase, didn't find any damage. And I guess what they're really hoping for, you know, not to be mean or anything, but is a good hurricane. Because we haven't had one down there in quite a while, and things are real grown up. And if we get one, it's really going to do a lot of damage to those trees, which would be good business for them. So I was kind of laughing with him and said, yeah, it'd be nice to get a good one. It'd give you all some work.
I didn't know anyone in the metropolitan area would have that light of touch.
And those guys working? Well, they weren't. They didn't seem like they were like real smart, but they didn't consider their job like you know, bottom of the rung stuff or something you'd look down on. They were proud of it, and he knew about trees. He could be real casual about a big 25-foot tree. To me, that was a big tree. To him, it was just a little stick in the ground there. And he knew all the trees around there. And he'd say, well, that one's going to break off there. He had his own authority in trees, and I didn't know anything about them. So, they weren't proud of it. They were just real sure, you know. They just knew trees. It was almost like... They didn't think about their work. It just happened. They just did.
Is that all they had, palm trees?
Oh, no, they did anything. They didn't want trees. Just, you have a lot of palm trees, don't you?
That's all they had all the way you were?
Well, that's all we wanted to have done, use that palm tree. You know, we have big Virginia oak. It grows right inside the house. It's big. And I'd like to see it cut up before a hurricane comes through, because it could I don't think he'd knock it over, but he'd tear it up pretty bad. But it's not our tree. It belongs to the neighbors. So we can just kind of hint. That's all.
Well, you all are not against trees.
As long as you don't fall in the house. You know, you have to be careful. Because every time you have a hurricane come through, somebody gets the side of the house caved in, you know, someone gets killed, and they fall in the car and smash it in half. And like those coconuts, you've got to be very careful with those coconut palms. The wind will pull those coconuts off and they'll just be like cannonballs. They'll just slam into houses and tear the windows up and do quite a bit of damage. That's the thing about a hurricane. The plane's pretty strong. They're built strong down there. But you just don't have anything out loose when one comes. And those trees are the thing you got to watch about. Those limbs become weapons.
Some just don't want to fool with trees, don't. Some people just don't want trees.
Well, I think they want them, but when they put in subdivisions and stuff, they usually don't plant many of them. It looks real barren. I mean, I don't like it without trees. It's just all concrete and asphalt. They don't have much yard, and what they do is it's always cut down. Doesn't look too good to me. But you can't let them grow like you would here. You can't just let them grow. You got to keep them trimmed because the hurricanes just tear them all up. And then you can't grow as many kinds as you can here. You know, because the soil is the way it is. You can just grow certain trees.
Yeah.
Tropical stuff.
But you can certainly grow all sorts of beautiful foliage plants.
Yeah. You can grow a lot of crotons mostly.
Say, this, you see, you always, anything you do, you know, you always run into problems. Now, what is,
Click.
Yeah. Have you got any problems?
Yep. Rick's working on, as I see it. Okay, let me put these up. Is same thing Suzanne and Barbara and all the rest of them and so forth. That's feeling easy when you go up to talk to somebody. Feeling just leave it as self conscious. And all I have to do is just open the subject and leave people to talk. They're not
geared. Very
self-conscious.
Well, you're just not expecting a conversation, you know, without statements. Because that's all you're taught to do. And to just sit and talk to somebody without some specific reason, you know, like, well, the purpose of this or the moral of this is, it just seems funny. Like a waste of time. And, well, it's just not. Like talking to Betsy this morning. Just to talk to her. And I could tell she was kind of thinking, well, why are you talking to me? And I was trying to get across, well, I just want to talk to you. Just to talk to you. And it's very hard for me to do that because I just never have.
Right. Well,
it was like, there was a girl I knew when I was in college, and she would talk. I mean, she would just talk about anything, everything she did, you know, just talk. And somehow I really managed to stop her from doing that, because I thought, well, this is pointless, you know, we should be talking about something in specific. And when she'd write long letters, just tell me every little thing. And I'd write back a very short, terse letter. And then hers started getting that way, too. Now I'm trying to reverse it and get her right again. because you know, all these little, like I say, little statements and theories, and they just sit there and they don't do anything.
Well, now, did Miss Becca make statements too?
No, she just talked. Told me about Vanderbilt and about her life. I think I was kind of trying to make her make statements. I done what? She was telling me, well, there was chicken in the front yard, and I asked her if it was her, and it was Dorothy. Mm-hmm. I said they came down here to eat the bugs, saw some light. I said, oh, does that light kill the bugs? Well, it didn't kill the bugs, but it sure killed the conversation. And I had to, you know, kind of fight to get that going again. She said, no, they just fall. It's kind of irritating. It doesn't matter if it kills them or not. The bugs are on the ground. The chicken's gonna eat them. That's all you need to know. And I'm trying to find out, well, are they dead or are they alive? And
that's one of the things I can see for that. It's all informative. They don't chatter. They're not Freudian, like on the campus or the offices. It's informative.
Mm-hmm.
Now she'll tell you she knows why that chicken's over there from Dorothy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you leave her alone, she'll do it. The questions will kill that and kill me too. They get me all heated up inside. It's a form of violence. People go around asking the questions.
Have to not be afraid of silence.
Right.
No, you've got other green lights besides questions.
Silence.
You know, when it just pauses for a minute.
Yeah.
That was hard. See, when she did, I started talking. And for the first half of the conversation, it was all mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just saying, well, this isn't working. I didn't come to talk that much. She got the Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I stay away from that stuff. You see, I keep there with the chickens in the land.
Well, you got to that, and I decided to go.
Yeah,
no,
oh, yeah. Well, that's very cool.
But, Rick, you see, this.
what I'm going to do, and whatever comes later is coming after I'm finished with it. And once I do that, it works out.
Like that, man.
What's new? Well, I want to, you know, spending time here. See? You know, staying a day or two and picking up and going. Like, just that time you get started, then you leave, and it doesn't work.
I'm having a breath in July. Can't you get into it?
Well, you know, we talked a little bit of that last night, and it's that same thing as Suzanne feels. I have to have a reason for being out here. I have to have a reason for Jim. I have to have a reason for Guy. I have to have a reason for my not having a job.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
To my parents.
Philosophy yourself, really. I mean, I sit and where will all this go? And I have to say, well, you can't answer that now because you're not sure. And you're just going to have a little trust that it's going to go. You just have to have, like I say, live dangerously and take a chance. But it would be just so easy to work for somebody, and it's pretty well planned out there. That's what's expected of me. But instead of having somebody do with my life, I'd rather take a chance to see what I can do with it.
Well, there's a chance you can take just so much chance, and then it'll get you. It'll bad out.
Yeah, but I figure I can stand that.
Up to a point you can, and then it'll eat on you.
Yeah. You'd be determined enough.
Determination is a very frailest of the virtues. Oh, I've seen determination on the face of one little freshman. He failed. He hadn't done anything. He had no muscle whatever. And he got a warning, thing, and he came to my office and he said, "Oh, I see you're from the state." He had no chance whatever here. He had no perception, and he was going to have the combination. I picked that up. I've had to work. I worked hard for that. I get it partly because these are poor riches.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about awareness, you know, that you can learn to look at what you're doing no matter what the job is.
Yeah.
And that's what it says.
If you learn to look.
That's right. And that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
see, before I get stuck in something and be selling soap or whatever, I want, you know, make sure I can at least know how to go about it. Looking at it. So that it would be more than just a selling soap. More than just a quota. Selling a quota is to step back and look at it.
So that's hanging over you all the time.
What's hanging over me is to do it or not to do it. I mean, to come up here and try to see or learn how to see or not to and just let it go. And it'd be right easy to do that. You get a good job offer and everybody, you know, that you've been associating with is like, "Well, this is great. You've got good financial security there. You've got it set up. You can really go. You get money in the bank and blah, blah, blah." And then you can do what you want. And I go, "Why can't I try and do what I want now?" I said, this thing of putting it off kind of scares me because you get far enough away from it, you're going to forget it. But that's why I just couldn't accept that job, because I was afraid I'd get into it.
What job
then? Being a salesman. I'd get into it and I'd start devoting my energy to it because they were looking at me and I figured I could move to them. It's a progressive company, but I'd end up devoting all my energies to becoming a area manager or something like that, and I just wouldn't have time.
That's a job you just had.
No, not area manager.
No, but sales.
Well, see, I wasn't even a salesman, I was just helping out. See, I was like being able to watch without any pressure on me.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to get into that. It's a rat race.
You had something, oh, you mean you just had something where the pressure wasn't very long?
See, yeah, it was a temporary job. So they just, they wanted these displays set up in stores. But, and it was kind of a manual labor job. You know, I had the plan. All I had to do was go in and tell the manager, and I, permission, everything was already there. I just had to go in and say, I'm the one that's doing it. Just identify myself and then go do it. See, there's no pushing there. There's no selling there. I really had very little hassle.
It had been done all the time.
Yeah, I was just carrying out what was already done. You know, plans were there. I was just doing the action. And, you know, I never really did any selling.
But even so, you had some close calls. Now, what was that about the Friday, late Friday?
Yeah, well, you see, the first thing that was wrong was they set this up 4 months ago. And I was coming in 4 months after this was done. And that just makes them mad right away. They say, well, look, if you all are going to do this, why don't you do it right away? And then I have to start telling them, well, this reason, that reason, and just make enough excuses to keep them happy, keep them going. And when you come Thursday and Friday, those stores get busy. They get a lot of people in those stores.
Yeah.
And those store managers want those shelves full and people out of the way so that people can buy. And I come in on a Thursday or Friday and say, well, I'm going to rearrange your shelf. Well, he gets mad because he knows salesmen will come in there, they'll take everything off the shelf, they'll fill up buggies, they'll clutter up the aisle, they'll take the time. And he says, well, no, you're not going to do it. Well, I'm on a schedule, I got to get it done. And I said, well, I've got to do it. And then I have to start promising that I'll be done in an hour. I'm not going to clutter up your shelf. I'm not going to give my product a big amount of space and give somebody else's a little bit amount of space, and I've got the plan here, and this is the reason why we have to do it today. And just to have him just say, well, all right, go ahead, but you better not use any carts. I go, okay, we'll do that. And you better not repack anything. You better leave everything on that shelf. I go, okay, I'll do that. And I go back and do my work. And of course, I could do it, you know, in the time I said it would. I'd get it all done, but they're mad. And even when I get it finished, you know, I'm working hard and I get it set up nice, and he'd look at it and say, doesn't look like much to me. But I just let it roll off the back. In fact, one guy said that, and I guess I was feeling kind of cocky, you know. I said, well, can I reset your powdered soap for you? See, I wasn't supposed to do that. I didn't have to do it, so I just thought I'd go ahead and do it. And he let me do it. I was that surprised. And then after I did that, he looked at the whole thing, and he got thinking, well, that's kind of nice. You know, set it up. And I found out if you do your work well.
Well, now, why couldn't I go in there and set up the powdered soap?
Well, you don't have any authority.
I don't mean authority. I mean, it wouldn't please anybody. I said them.
Well, there's so much involved, really. See, some people have it set up according to the way they move. The highest selling product goes in this corner, and the lowest selling product goes in this corner. And then somebody has it set up to the kind of product it is. If it's a concentrated soap, it goes here. If it's a soap with a towel inside, it goes here. If it's a premium brand soap, it goes here. And well, what we do, we take the best selling soap, which is Tide, and we put ours right next to it, because that's a good place to be. So I have to kind of tell him that that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to get our brand beside the best-selling brand. But at the same time, I'm trying to show him that I'm thinking about everybody else's product. Because, you see, when they think of salesmen, the first thing they think of is that, well, he's going to cut everybody down and put his product in as much room as he can. Well, that makes him mad. The store manager's not partial to brands unless his own company makes it. And he doesn't care if Procter & Gamble has four rows and Colgate-Palmolive has one inch. that he's not partial there. He just likes to see a nice balance. And if some product is selling a lot, but he wants a little more room on that, well, see, some of these salesmen will come in and they'll take number one seller and they'll cut it down to just a tiny bit of space. And then they'll get their product, which may not sell at all, and they just fill up the shelf with it. Well, it makes the store manager mad. He can't sell that way. He loses money. And that's what they think you're going to do as soon as you come in that store. Well, see, I'm not going to do that because I used to work in a store and I had salesmen do that to me. And it made me mad because then I had to reset everything when the salesman left. So I'd always promise the guy, look, I'm not going to screw you. I'm going to give a nice balance to every product. And I would do that. And he'd look at it and he'd realize. And
that's what you meant when you said reset the store.
Yeah. You know, well, you just rearrange the order. But you got to be fair. And if you want to get
he knows all those things.
Oh, he knows. Well, he's sharp. You don't pull any tricks on. And if you do, they'll throw you out of the store.
All the store.
Oh yeah, they're sharp. I mean, it doesn't take long to learn. They're aware of you. First thing they told me when I went to work is, don't you do anything unless you go talk to the person in charge and tell them what you're going to do. Nine times out of ten, they'll let you do it. But if you just go over and start doing it, they'll kick you out of the store. And it's true. Because I'd go to start setting a section, and then I'd see somebody stocking, and I'd go and say, you work this section? He said, yeah. Well, I didn't have to ask him because he wasn't store manager. He just stocked that section, and he just stocked it. But I'd always tell them what I was going to do. And I'd always bring them down there. And I'd say, well, what do you think of this? And what do you think of this? Well, they usually don't know. That's funny. But as long as you let them think that you're dependent on them, well, then you get all the cooperation you want. And I remember one store I went in, the salesman had been kicked out of the store because he'd done something without permission. Well, I didn't know this. And I said I was from Colgate-Palmolive. And he said, oh, yeah? Well, you know, we just kicked salesmen out of here. And I went, oh, because I figured I'm not going to have trouble here. So I just started talking to him, you know, trying to find out what had happened and start telling him what I was going to do. And it ended up that we must talk for an hour, you know, about how it set it up. And it worked out real good. I got him to start ordering products that he wasn't before because he was mad at the salesman. Got him to give me more space than I wanted. It just all worked out. And just because I let him stay in charge of his section, I didn't try to run over him. Because you have to realize he's the one that's got to work that every day, and you've got to set it up where it's easy for him to work.
Oh, I see.
You know what is nice for you may be hell for him.
Well, now what would make it easy for him to work?
Well, like you get a case, let's say soap. All right, you got 12 bottles in there. Well, when you set that shelf, you want to set it so he can get that whole case on at once. Because if he doesn't, he's got to put it in the back room. That means later on in the week, he's got to bring it back out again and put it out. Well, that takes some time. Plus, it clutters up the back room, and they're always getting yelled at about keeping the back room clean. So I'd always try and give enough room for one case. And if I couldn't, you know, well, he'd understand. Because, you know, I'd show him and say, there just isn't enough room. And this is a slow-selling product, so I just can't give it enough room. So, well, that's okay, I understand. But as long as you make an effort, they'll go along with you. They're not unreasonable. Yeah. But you got to let them know.
In my recollection, I have noticed the same. My recollection is there's not too much room there for the stuff.
No.
It's like they'd have to look at it all the time, every day.
Well, there's supposed to be like a master plan that shows where everything goes, how much room it gets. But like you're stocking, like you've run out of beans, and you've got a lot of peas. So you just fill up the bean section with peas because you don't want that hole there. It doesn't look good. Now they'll tell you to leave that hole there, but when you've got it all stocked and got all those cans in, and you got one big hole, it just doesn't look good. So you know, just fill it up with peas. And then whoever comes to stock that section next, well, they don't know that. And they order the wrong amount of peas, and they don't order any beans. See, and then that just keeps happening, and it just all starts moving around. So we go in, and we stop all that. We rearrange everything like it's supposed to be, with the label. And it'll last a little while and we'll start losing it again. You always fight me. Our salesman come in from another company. He'll undo everything you did, rearrange it different. You come in next week and you arrange it back, and this just goes on back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Well, the manager of that section kind of murdered the salesman.
Yeah, and that's why salesmen get kicked out of stores, because you get tired of that. See, when you're ordering, what you do is you look at the shelf, and you see how much is there, and you can say, well, I could probably use a case. Now, if that's in the same place every week, after a while, you're going to know, well, I've been moving a case for this week. So it's no trouble to order. You just go right down the line. But when they start moving, then it takes you twice as long. It's just irritating.
Yeah, I can see that. And I didn't realize that they were
shelved
according to certain purposes.
Yeah, everything is by section,
mm-hmm.
by size.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have everything set up in order so you can move around the store easy.
Well, now, look, Rick, if you you see this sort of what you do now, you see, you can live around this with your file. But now, you see, out here, I sinned for you yesterday. I wouldn't let you get mixed up with Jim.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I run my business, you might say, but you were here, and he's your peer, and you're just right on the other. But now, anywhere you go, you're going to have to fend for yourself, and you can't do it.
No, yeah.
That's why I said last night, you got to lose friends.
Yeah, that's what you mean by that. Too many commitments.
But now, that's right. Now, how does that work?
Well, that just has to
stop. Now, I don't mean that. I mean, how has it been working down there? You haven't had any time.
In Miami?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. I just think about all the things I was going to do every night, and maybe one night a week, I'd have time to type or study something. And I just wonder where it was going, and, you know, of course, a lot of nights I was like driving to the hospital for them, which is just kind of necessary there, but it does, it ties up.
But that cures you, then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It ties your mind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to say no. Well, let's go out and have a beer. Let's go talk. Let's go see somebody. Yeah, well, and you do. And you think, well, I'll get back and I'll do it. When you get back, it's just all gone. Yeah, I guess that kind of a fear I've always had. It's like when I was playing trombone. See, I take that horn home every night, but I wouldn't practice it. My eyes always well. Well, right after dinner, I'm going to practice that horn, but then something would come on, and, well, I better watch the evening news.
Now, say, your youngsters have that same experience.
Yeah.
Well, yes, the only thing is, you see, I face it, you know what I'm saying. I say, of course, if they don't do certain things, then they don't connect with me. I mean, let's even that out.
Yeah.
So I really... Send from all the time.